Ooh, welcome. Step right in. Take a look around. I promise that no matter who you are, we've got something here for you. Think of any creature, any companion, any friend. We've got it. It's our business to provide to you, our valued customer, anything that you could possibly think of. Anything at all. So, think real hard, because we've got all that and more here at Zach and Griffin's Multiversal Pet Shop. Welcome, folks, to the Fight of the Decade! In this corner, we've got the magnet himself, Griffin Calder.
Ooh, yeah! And let's go, magnet, stick it to him!
And in this corner, we've got this raccoon we got from the garbage outside.
I'm a raccoon! Yeah! Oh my god!
He's rabid and ready to rock. It's Monty!
And then I've got you, Zach, as like my corner guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah. It's like,
you're the toughest out there. No one can beat you.
Do I really have to do this?
Yeah, you do. You're contractually obligated.
That's a raccoon.
I don't know why I, Zach, suddenly have like a New York accent. I feel like it's only needed for this situation.
You're in character. It makes sense. Yeah. How is the raccoon even in my weight class?
It's not so much a weight class. Like this is going to be on one of those really obscure sort of ESPN channels. You know, like that, dodgeball. It's like on the Ocho.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, amateur raccoon wrestling. It's a whole thing.
Okay. Wish any advice?
Punch him right in the center of his weird little raccoon mask. All right, let's roll.
We're not gonna feel good about this.
With that, folks, the fight begins. Ding ding.
That's the bell. You can add a better one if you want.
For sure, for sure. Thank you, Editor Griffin. Take note. All right, hey, Monty, was it? You know, like, good clean match.
Oh, shit, Griff, he just snubbed you. He just snubbed you for your fist bump, man.
Oh, this is a travesty. This is a disrespectful.
Get angry, get mean. Beat him up. Beat him up.
I'm angry.
Give me the rock.
Ah, fuck. Oh, God. Zach is winning.
Ding, ding.
Round one.
Get back over here. Get back over here. All yeah. Right, we'll get some iodine on those scratches.
Oh, my God.
This is going to be a very long night.
Can I just grab it by the tail and fucking throw it into the crowd? Or is that like a liability thing?
No, you should not. Go for it.
Okay.
Round two. Begin. Okay. Ding, ding.
Give me your piece of shit. Yeah.
You did it, kid. You did it, champ.
That's why they call me the magnet. Because like poles repel. Fuck you.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to an episode of Zach and Griffin's Multiversal Pet Shop. I'm Zach.
And I'm amateur raccoon wrestling grand champion, Griffin Cold Iron.
Griffin the Magnet Cold Iron.
I will find a bit anywhere in there.
You know, we're back with another episode. Happy to be here. We had to squeeze this one in just anywhere we could, huh, Griffin?
Pretty much. It is like 9 o'clock on a Sunday.
Yeah, between your vacation and my upcoming tech week,
I am literally on vacation right now.
Hey, here we are. But we're never on vacation from the pet shop.
Oh, no. I commute almost daily.
Our souls were intertwined.
Yeah.
The moment we started this business.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's a Hissam Getfaffer.
Hassam Getfaffer and
hunger.
Zach, can you remind everyone real quick just what Hassam Getfaffer stands for?
Oh, I'm always excited to remind them. Of course it stands for
Holy shit! Oh my god! These folks are fucking bad!
Hassam Gafar. Thank you.
Yeah. Hassam Gafar, perhaps the world's greatest acronym. But we talk about a lot of creatures on this show that would make good pets, and from these amazing books and source material, where sometimes they're full of things that would not make good pets because they're just people.
They're just folks, yeah.
They're fully, like, sapient. So, or sentient? I always get them confused.
I think sentient. Why not both?
Why not both? Sentient and sapient. They have a a sense of self about this, a oneness that would make it weird and likely illegal and highly morally dubious to own that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, we're going to celebrate them.
Yes, we're just going to talk about how rad they are. Of course, we're working on Tome of Beasts 1 by Cobalt Press.
The original Tome of Beasts.
Always incredible. Full of bangers.
Full of mash.
Full of mash. Bangers and mash.
I'm on one today.
Hey, it's Sunday at 9 o'clock.
It's a sleepy boy episode.
We're both. Look, I'm real tired. I've had a fucking week. I have worked two shifts, worked on. This is my third podcast project I've worked on this weekend. I have a long tech Sunday. So let's do this, gang.
Let's do it.
But this is the Burak. B-U-R-A-Q, Burak, Burak, Burak Obama.
We've been kind of saying it with that little bit of affectation on the end of Burak, and I kind of like it.
Yeah. What I'm looking at, so imagine in your mind, Pegasus. You know,
yeah.
The
good start.
The horse body gray. The you know sort of. Mane, tail, and you know feathers of the wings being sort of like a dark gray or almost black with like some sort of light gray sort of accents in there.
Mm-hmm. But then salt and pepper vibe.
Yeah, a little salt and pepper vibe. But instead of like the head of like a horse, just put like a dude head on there. with a big beard. And it's just got, because like I think the head's there, it's just in like the horse ears. But it, like instead of the long horse face, it's just a dude face.
Yeah, it still has like the long horse neck or like Pegasus neck.
Yeah,
that you would expect like
the
sort
equine
of
equine neck.
Yeah, you would expect then the equine face with like the long like bridge of the nose and everything to kind of come off of that. That's gone, and someone has just cut and paste a dude face onto like. A third of the way down the neck.
Well, I don't know if it's that or if the beard is keeping us from seeing that, like, you know, the where the face is sitting,
like
move.
It's all actually attached. Yeah.
Would
make more sense and be less weird.
Yeah.
But
I feel like that head's able to turn. I just think, like, yeah, the way that it's holding, it definitely looks like the face is just on the neck, which is a little unsettling. But yeah, an aura of holiness surrounds this handsome human-headed equine with its short but strong feathered wings.
Handsome's a... I mean, the face is kind of handsome. The rest leaves a little something to be desired.
Yeah. I guess we'll start with the top of the stat block. This is a medium celestial. It's lawful good.
Okay.
But yeah, let's see. Only the worthy... A Burak possesses astounding speed, determination, and resilience among a host of noble qualities, but only pure-hearted humanoids can obtain a service from such a righteous and honorable creature.
That kind of tracks with the Pegasus comparison you made earlier, because Pegasus, you know, in Greek mythology was very picky about
him. Yeah, they were, yeah. They're angel-marked. Every Burak wears a gilded band around its head or neck. I don't see a gilded band.
Not on this one.
Not on this one.
Maybe he just graduated from Burak school.
It's very possible. Yeah, he's undecided. these are said to be angelic seals or wardings, each different. The hide of every Burak is white. That is gray. Though their beards, lashes, manes, and tails vary from silver to dusty tan to deep brown or glossy black.
Okay, so they can have, there's some variety in like the hair color nice. And everything.
Nice, nice, nice. And they're heavily.
You get a modern day, like a sort of like blue.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of like, you know, emo blue.
Love that. Yeah, the hair. There's hair falling over one of the eyes.
Mm-hmm. It's very cool.
Very good. They're heavenly steeds. A Barak is smaller than a mule, but bigger than a donkey. Though their carrying capacity belies their size and apparent strength. Nevertheless, a Barak is the ultimate courier and a heavenly steed. Paladins and good aligned clerics are the most likely candidates to ride a Barak, but other virtuous characters have had this privilege. I'm good. You know, I'm. Yeah. I think I'm good.
It's also a medium celestial, so like you straddle this thing and your feet are fully touching the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like that thing is me sized.
That it's just like that would be like if I went up to you and I'm like, all right, let's giddy up, let's do this. And then like what? I just a stride it would just be like a striding a bro, you know?
Oh, hey. Oh, okay. Okay, we're going to Costco. Okay,
yeah, we gotta go. It's free samples, and then I gotta get one of those sort of surplus. What's the word I'm looking for? Buy in bulk things of fruit by the foot. So let's get out of here.
Wholesale.
Thank you. Wholesale. Yes,
that's the word you were looking for.
You're incredible.
Thank you.
But yeah, this is a medium celestial, awful good. Armor class is 17, 152 hit points, 60 foot walking, 90 foot flying. Very quick.
Wow.
Very quick.
They are fast.
They got a strength of 15, dex of 18, con of 20, intelligence of 18, wisdom of 18, charisma of 20.
Are you sure about that?
Their lowest is a 15, and then the next lowest are 18s and then 20s.
Now, constitution makes sense to me because they're running and flying all the time.
All the time.
They've got that like Hermes level endurance. Yeah.
Dex but also then, makes sense.
Yes. But Chariz, I guess that just comes by virtue of being a celestial.
But also the handsome human head.
Yeah. But like, it's one of those dumbass biblically accurate angel things where this thing shows up in front of you and goes, be not afraid. And you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What even is? What even are?
Angels are actually horrifying. Let's talk about that for just a moment. Why are there so many eyes?
There's too many eyes. There's often like geometry that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Was it the Ophanim or Onaphim? I don't remember. It's either Ophanim and Onaphim. That's just a bunch of rings with eyes on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is this?
See, they don't teach you that in Catholic school.
No, they
don't. All the angels look like hot and have like beautiful white wings.
Yeah, they don't go, this religion has some weird cosmic horror vibes to it that we're not going to talk to you about.
But it does make sense if I were, like, a good intended being and I looked like that, my first words also would be not afraid.
Be not afraid.
But people would still be afraid of me, and I'd be like, yeah, I get it.
I get it. Christianity's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck Christianity. Yeah. Moving on. Yeah. Let's see. It's got good saves in con, wisdom, and charisma. Plus 9, plus 8, plus 9. Let's go with history and religion. Nice. Resistant to radiant, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical weapons. It is immune to charm, exhausted, or frightened. Has true sight to 120 feet.
Wow.
Speaks celestial, common, primordial, and has telepathy out to 120 feet. And then, let's see. It's got angelic weapons. All of its attacks are magical. When it hits with its hooves, it deals an extra 4d8 radiant damage. It's got innate spell casting. It's charisma with a spell save of DC 17. Nice. Where it can at will do comprehend languages, detect evil and good, holy aura, pass without trace.
It can fucking do holy aura at will?
At will.
That's an 8th level spell.
3 times a day, it can do haste and long strider. And then once a day, you can do plane shift and wind walk.
Oh my god.
It's got magic resistance. It's got something called Night Journey. When outdoors at night, a Barak's vision is not limited by non-magical darkness. Once per month, the Barak can declare it is on a night journey. For the next 24 hours, it can use its teleport once per round. Its destination must always be in an area of non-magical darkness within its line of sight. At any point during the night journey, as a bonus action, the Barak can return itself and its rider to the location where it began the night journey.
That's really cool.
It's got,
you know what that makes me think of? What? Did you ever watch Young Justice?
Yes.
The episode where Kid Flash has to like run cross country with like
a donor heart
or something.
Yeah, like medicine. Yeah.
That's what that makes me think of for some reason.
That episode was so fucking good.
It's a great episode.
Dude, Young Justice was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I don't know if you watched any of the later seasons, like after like they came back from being canceled.
I watched season three with like the lava dude or whatever. And then I like started four but fell off of it at four.
This is all just Garf freaking Beast Boy being real sad. And I'm like, buddy, no. But anywho, it's got a multi-attack. This two attack with its hooves, it's +8/+8 to hit, does 2d6 +4 bludgeoning, +4 radiant.
Those divine hooves.
Check out my divine hooves. Oh, sorry, it's Barak. Let me be clear. My hooves are divine.
Let me be clear.
You
get that vocal fry. Yeah. Don't get it twisted.
My fellow Midgarders, let me be clear. it's got that once per day teleport where it magically teleports itself and its rider along with any equipment is carrying or wearing or carrying to a location the Barak is familiar with up to 1 mile away.
Holy shit. Oh my god.
That's pretty neat.
These folks are fucking rad.
These folks are fucking rad.
I like them a lot. There's, Celestials are always really interesting to me because, like, it's really easy to just do, like, the, you know, very Christian angel thing. And I like that, like, the devils are all weird and shit. It would kind of make sense that on the other side of the coin, the Celestials are also kind of weird.
Especially because, like, Christian mythology tells us that angels are pretty fucking weird.
Yeah. I love how you called it Christian mythology.
It's Christian mythology.
I love that. I think the Buraks are pretty fucking cool.
I think they're pretty neat. Okay, so I'm going to put on the persona of a girl on Love Island, and I'm going to ask you, babes, what would be like your like perfect Barak on paper? So, like,
I've never watched Love Island.
Oh, well, it's just, like, describe to me, like, if you had a, you know, like, saw Barak, like, you know, talked about how, like, their hair and, like, you know, their stuff was sort of very widely. So, like, if you could, like, pick, like, what, like, your ideal Barak would look like.
Do I have to do the accent?
No, you don't have to do the accent. It's just like, you know, the when all the people show up, there's always like two girls from Essex who are like, so babes, tell me sort of like, what exactly are you looking for? And it's like, oh yeah, this is sort of my type on paper. So sort of tall, dark, and handsome.
Yeah, I did not know the parameters of the bit.
All right, that's fine. I just watch a lot of Love Island, so.
Never seen a single episode.
You got to, Griff. You got to.
I don't understand. Okay, I'll do it.
Watch a little bit of season three of Love Island UK. You'll be my best friend forever. You already are my best friend forever, but you'll just get me all the more.
I'll just really reinforce my position.
Wait, 1 second. Let me double check. I want to make sure that's the season that Chris and Kim are on. Because I'm pretty sure. Chris and Kim, Love Island. What's it? I think it was season three, but it might be season four. Give me a moment. Because we love Chris and Kim in this household.
Honestly, Ellie would be down, so...
Yes, do it.
I'll recruit her to this action.
Come on. Yeah, it was the third season. Yeah.
Okay.
Do it. You have to.
Okay.
For me.
I will do this.
Right after this episode. Ellie, we have to watch it as a little bit of Love Island.
Listen, we've got a free day. We're on vacation. Awesome. Shall we move on?
Well, you got to tell me what your Barak on paper would be.
Oh, you know, kind of on the short side, like silver hair.
Ooh. Like
a little shorter in the beard zone, but like still there. So something I can like hold on to, you know?
Give me like a ginger Barack.
It'd be interesting. That'd be an interesting combo with the like gray sort of model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fur kind of vibe. Yeah.
And then like a nose ring.
Ooh. This dragon person's too hot. We gotta move on. Did I say dragon person? This horse person's too hot.
You did say dragon person. All right. Moving on. Up next, Zach, we have the arena. The arena, not arena, like a place where you fight, but arena, E-R-I-N-A. The arena are hedgehog folk.
Huh.
They're little hedgehog dudes.
We love.
And dudettes. This small humanoid has a slightly pointed face with bright brown eyes and a black snout-like nose. Its skin is covered in short tan fur, and its head, shoulders, and back have smoothed down quills. They are a small communal race. They are burrowed villages. They have burrowed villages. Natural diggers at heart, arenas live in shallow networks of tunnels and chambers they excavate themselves. Enemies who attack the peaceful arenas easily become confused and lost in the maze-like tunnels. On their own ground, the arenas can easily evade, outmaneuver, or surround invaders. They often lure them onto choke points where the enemy can be delayed endlessly while non-combatants and valuables are hustled to safety through other tunnels.
Cute.
Yeah. But our image here is, yeah, just like a little bipedal hedgehog dude. You know, they've got that like sort of primitive clothing, little like sash across the chest with some like tools in there, maybe it looks like. And then it's got little grabby hands, which is always interesting seeing animal folk.
We're running into the weird puffin folk in one book where they just had dude hands.
These are a little less just dude hands, but they're basically still dude hands.
Well, they got dude feet, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And it's holding onto a little short spear that it has speared a fish with. So good job there, buddy.
They all kind of look like they're in hair bands, I'm assuming. Like they got like that
a
big
little bit.
Sort of...
Yeah, their head and their quills do reach pretty far above where like the face is.
Yeah.
So it's always something where like I feel like I'd always be like ducking under things.
Yeah.
Like I would bonk my quills a lot if I was walking around.
Bump your noggin on stuff.
They are scroungers and gatherers. Arenas are naturally curious. They tend to explore an area by tunneling beneath it and popping up at interesting points. They dislike farming, but subsist mainly on the bounty of the land surrounding their homes. In cities, they still subsist on what they can find and have a knack for finding whatever they need. Sometimes they're called thieves, but they are not greedy or malicious. They take only what they need and seldom take anything from the poor. Some humans even consider it lucky to have a family of arenas nearby.
Nice.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, you know, just sometimes you got a hedgehog nearby and it's pretty chill.
They are small humanoids. They are considered neutral alignment, typically. In this example, they have 12 armor class with leather armor, 22 hit points. They have a 20-foot ground and a 20-foot burrow speed.
Nice.
So they're fast as fuck when they're digging.
Fast as fuck, boy.
They got pretty average stats. Their constitution is the highest out of 14. You've got dexterity, intelligence, and charisma at plus ones. Actually, that's incorrect. Look at the charisma. It says 11, but the modifier is plus one. They have a 10 wisdom and then a 9 strength. They are resistant to poison damage. They have dark vision out to 60 feet. They speak common and they speak their own tongue, arena. They have keen smell, so advantage on wisdom perception checks that rely on smell. They are considered hardy, so they also have advantage on saving throws against poison. And they have spines, where any enemy who hits an arena with a melee attack within 5 feet takes 1d4 piercing damage from the spines.
She gets poked.
And they can attack with a dagger and a sling, doing a d4 plus 2 damage on each. There's also another stat block here for something called the Arena Defender. As the largest and hardiest of their kind, Arena Defenders take the defense of their home tunnels very seriously and are quite suspicious of outsiders.
I don't know about you.
I'm suspicious.
Definitely suspicious.
Once an outsider proves himself a friend, they warm considerably. But until then, defenders are quite spiky. The stats here are largely the same. They have higher armor class, higher hit points. Their stats are improved a little bit. And then their spines deal 2d4 piercing damage. They've got stronger spines. They have a short sword and a short bow up from their dagger and sling. And they have a protect reaction where they can impose disadvantage on an attack roll made against an ally within 5 feet of the defender.
I like that.
Yeah, so they've got little, little militia folks.
They're just little guys trying to do the best that they can.
Yeah, I like the idea of a little underground community.
Yeah.
Because we see these, like, you know, different animal folks pop up from time to time, and I feel like the common thing that you'll see is they kind of just get transplanted into, like, larger cities. Like, all right, you've got a big city, and you referenced the puffin folk earlier. It's like, oh yeah, you've got all the puffin folk down by the docks or whatever. But like, what would a community, what does a town or a village of just these folks look like?
Yeah.
And I like the idea that it's all burrow tunnels underground. That's cool.
It's cute. I like them. I want to make one a monk so I can run really fast and call them Sonic.
That's pretty good. Yeah, combine an arena with a barack, and you've just got Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send this arena on a fucking night journey, and then he's Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Keanu Reeves has been cast as Shadow the Hedgehog?
Yes, I have.
What fucking timeline are we living in?
I love that. I think it's incredible.
What do you think arena village, like, nightlife looks like?
You know, probably a lot of, I imagine a lot of musicians involved. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just like one cute little arena, you know, they're looking for love. They haven't had a lot of luck lately, but you know, they're out, they're listening to some music, and their eyes catch with this other handsome arena, and the two of them kind of like make eyes, and they're kind of tiptoeing around the fact that they notice each other.
But the one's playing the bassoon.
The bassoon. At some point, you know, the band takes a break. You know, our hero arena, they're getting a drink or something, and then the, you know, the bassoonist shows up, and it's like, hey, can I buy you a drink? And then they fall in love, and it's beautiful.
I saw you from across the bar, and we like your vibe.
Yeah. Did you say it? We like your vibe?
Yeah.
And then the arena gets with asking, the whole band.
Well, probably not the whole band. And I was thinking maybe the bassoonist, and then, like, perhaps the oboist.
Oh,
and, like,
okay.
And then maybe also, like, I think they have a slightly ongoing thing with the flautist.
Oh, gotcha.
And, like, the flautist would be down for, like, another, like, sort of romp. But, you know, they're going to want to, like, minimally it's going to be the oboist and the bassoonist. And they're going to check in with the flautist.
Mm-hmm.
And then
sometimes the flautist just likes to watch, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And then this our hero, at the end of this ordeal, does join the band as a cellist.
Oh. Yeah, we find out the whole time that really just the only dream that our hero had was just to play the cello.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think they like had a they like played the cello like as a younger arena.
Yeah.
Like doing some trying to do some like really experimental shit where like you're playing the strings like with the quills. Yeah.
But their parents were like,
weird sounds.
They're like, we are, you know, arena. We gather berries and that's it. Not in this family. And so then, yeah, that led to tension between the parents, you know, and they kind of gave up on their dream for a bit, but then falling in love with this polyamorous arena band really reawoken their passion for music.
Yeah, it really took a hot hedgehog foursome to break them out of the traditionalist shackles that they had been wearing this whole time.
I know we said
to reinvigorate their love for the cello.
I know we said that we were gonna goof on them. Instead, we just created a beautiful story, and I'm here for it.
Featuring hot hedgehog foursome sex.
Yes.
Yes.
Ad break this time.
This is a good TV show. Yes, this isn't like a TV show. This is a podcast.
This is a good podcast. Ad break time. Roll Grumble.
Yes, Samantha, Grumble, please.
There are hundreds of dating sites, dating apps, and matchmakers out there, and do you know what they all have in common? A complete lack of respect for the humble goblin. Are goblins just expected to pick up the dregs left behind by the dashing half-elf sweeping away the fairest maidens? Are bugbears just supposed to be the third wheel to their dwarven friends all their lives? Are ogres really deserving of love? No. No. And yes, on Grumble, things are different. Grumble is the premier dating and romance service for goblins and goblin kin. At Grumble, our staff delicately reviews every application to ensure only the deepest connection between you and your future love, or loves. We cater to all genders, colors, and sexualities. Just say the word and we won't stop until you are thoroughly satisfied. Just listen to some of our most satiated clients.
Before Grumble, I thought I'd never find anyone for me. Between my busy schedule of murder and pillaging, there was no time to look for love. Now, thanks to Grumble, every day I return to my cave, covered in the blood of my enemies, to the little green love of my life. I don't know how I'd pillage without them.
After a hard day of trading stocks and bonds, it was nice to meet up with my newfound hobgoblin biddy for a good old-fashioned bone down. Let me tell you, Grumble got me exactly what I needed. Someone to share my hyper-aggressive sexual tendencies with. Price, no problem. Discretion, don't worry about it. Satisfaction, guaranteed. Big thumbs up to Grumble.
Me and my bugbear partner were looking for someone open-minded to add to our relationship, but goblins aren't really well known for being that flexible. However, thanks to Grumble, they curated several candidates for us to look over, and we welcomed Brizgax to our home and our hearts. Couldn't have done it without the hardworking folks at Grumble.
Thanks, Grumble!
Sign up for Grumble today with 25% off your first month using the promo code PETSHOP and start looking for the goblin of your dreams. Grumble. Get busy.
Alrighty. So up next week, we got
I would be remiss to not thank Samantha in the booth today as our intern du jour.
Yeah.
She's doing great work. Thank you, Samantha. We might even have her back next time.
We'll see. We'll see how she does.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Riley almost snuck his way back in. Changed the spelling of his name on his application.
Oh, added
E. Riley, I can smell you through the walls, Riley. I want to fucking try it.
I'm going to call their mom.
Yeah.
All right. So this next cutie, is the Lantern Dragonette.
We love a dragonette.
We do love a dragonette here. This is just like a cute little dragon. It's about cat. Yeah, this cat-sized drake with a waxy appearance and a glow emanating from its belly can hover in midair, filling a small area with a warm glow. Yeah, it's just like a cute little dragon. It's like on a branch. It's got arms and legs and then wings, so it's not a wyvern.
It's a drake.
But it's got a little wyvern, like, fang on the end of the tail there.
A little stinger, yeah.
A little stingy boy. It's interesting. But yeah, it's just a cute little guy. He's like kind of blue and purpley, got that light coming from its chest belly area.
Yeah, the wings almost seem translucent.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And also the eyes are like pupil-less, which
I think
is a
they're
nice
just kind of glowing.
Yeah.
Let's see. The lantern dragonette is named for its belly, which glows with a warm light. The beast's yellow waxy scales darken with age, though lantern drakes rarely live more than 50 years or so. They weigh from 5 to 10 pounds and are 18 inches long. Is that from head to tip of tail? Because that's not a long 18 inches.
I mean, they're pretty, they're small. They're a little bitty guy. They're tiny.
It's fair.
It's just, it's like a little lantern you hold in your hands.
In your hands. Most believe they're the result of an arcane fusion, god damn it, wizards, of a radiant spirit with a paper drake.
Yeah. There's they're really a sort of substituting dragonette and drake interchangeably.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's not how that works, but just so you audience know, if we switch it around, they're doing that on us.
Yeah, they're doing it in the book. They eat candle wax.
Ah, sick.
The drake devours 4 ounces of candle wax per day, plus 4 more ounces if it uses its belly lantern. A lantern dragonette's unusual diet leads to its lair in libraries, abbeys, and other places of study. Even though the dragonettes eat candles essential for study during dark hours, they still provide light and protect their adopted homes. Residents and caretakers consider them good luck and enjoy conversing with them.
Yeah, I guess it's fair if they're going to eat my candles that they should at least give off some light in exchange.
Something about eat my candles is very funny.
They're gonna eat my fucking candles.
Yeah, that's the new insult for Brennan Lee Mulligan. Eat your fucking candles, Brennan. apparently they're telepathic chatterboxes. This gregarious drake prefers to speak with its companions, but uses telepathy if necessary, and the creature hisses when surprised or displeased. It loves nothing more than discussing magic and history with an intelligent and informed individual.
Hell yeah.
Their adventurous companions. Occasionally a dragonette wishes to learn more about the world, finds a spellcaster or adventuring party to travel with, purely for the sake of learning or to acquire new sources of knowledge. Most parties enjoy the traveling light source and the abilities these companions bring to bear. A lantern dragonette avoids combat and uses its abilities only to escape or to defend its lair, family, and friends.
Nice.
A dragonette lives up to 30 years, which kind of contradicts the 50 years that they said earlier, but that's fine. A mated pair produces one clutch of 2 to 5 eggs every 5 years, and one parent raises the young dragonettes until they mature after a year and leave to search for their own lairs. A cloister of lantern dragonettes taxes their lair's resources, so the other parent often ventures out to retrieve more candles. Could you imagine working at, like, a general store and then, like, you know, like, the door opens, but, like, you don't see anyone walk in, and then a few minutes later you hear, "Hey there," and you're like, what? And you do, like, the thing where you look over the counter and look down and it's just a little drag. "I would like to buy all of your candles, please." "Sure, little guy. You're going to be able to carry this?" "I'll be fine, I assure you." Let's see, the lantern dragonette.
A cloister of lantern dragonettes, like a group, like a family of lantern dragonettes, is called a chandelier.
I love that. But yeah, they're tiny dragons, they're lawful neutral, 13 armor class, 28 hit points, 15 foot walk, 40 foot fly, but it's a hover. Nice.
Weird.
Yeah, highest stat is its intelligence at a 6. After that, it's got con and wisdom at 13.
At a 16.
16, plus 3. I'm dumb. 16, then con and wisdom 13 with a plus 1. And then, charisma dex plus 1s, and then strength at a 7. Hey, it's 2. Let's go with dex, wisdom, and charisma saving throws. Let's go with arcana, history, nature, perception, and religion. It's a smart cookie.
Yeah, it's got all those intelligence skills. That's fun.
It's immune to paralyzed and unconscious.
Sure.
I'm never going to sleep.
I wouldn't be able to sleep if I had a light coming out of my belly the whole time.
That's fair. Well, it says if it uses its belly.
Fair enough.
It's got dark vision out to 60 feet. It can speak common, draconic, elvish, primordial, and telepathy out to 60 feet.
Nice.
It's a challenge rating of 1/2. It's got a lantern belly it can use once per day. If the dragonette has eaten 8 ounces of candle wax in the last 24 hours, it can emit a continual flame for 3d20 minutes. The continual flame can be dispelled, and the dragonette can resume it with a bonus action, except in areas of magical darkness, if the time limit hasn't expired.
It could be 3 minutes. It could be an hour.
Yeah. It's got a very large margin of error there.
Yeah.
It's got some innate spell casting. It's intelligence. It's got a DC 13. It's +5 to hit with spell attacks. It can innately cast the following spells requiring no material components. One day each. It does Burning Hands, Color Spray, and Scorching Ray. That's pretty nice. Potent.
Yeah. Just burps that candle wax back up and lights on fire.
And it's vulnerable to magical darkness. A lantern dragonette in an area of magical darkness loses its lantern belly ability and its ability to fly. It also suffers 1d6 radiant damage for every minute of exposure.
Oh.
Hmm.
Interesting.
But yeah, then it's just got its bite, +3 to hit, and it's d4 +1 piercing as it noms you. They're cute little buddies.
There are cute little buddies. It is fun and deceptive that it's like trying to bite an intruder or whatnot. It's like, oh, you pesky little twerp, get out of here. And then it just like hits you with the burning hands. Just this little cone of fire. Just.
I like them. They're cute little, just cute, friendly little dudes. Yeah.
They're cute. I've always liked the Dragonettes. I think they're... fun additions to the various Tome of Beasts that we've seen.
I'm sad. They don't have the usual thing where they like, Lantern Dragonettes as familiars. They don't have the info on there.
Well, if we were designing this, what's that, what's the symbiotic ability? What ability does the, what would the spellcaster share with the familiar? Would I also be able to eat candle wax and have my belly glow?
That would be pretty cute.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mention the stinger on its tail at all.
It doesn't. It's just like a nice little visual.
Yeah.
It's
that's really good for like turning a page with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone's like, why are there little pinpricks on all of these pages?
Don't use it to scrape candle wax off of like a larger candle.
Yeah.
It's like just uses it as a fork, basically.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a fan. Are you a fan?
I'm a fan. I think they're cool. I like the Dragonettes a lot. That we've every Dragonette we've talked about has been cool.
What's your favorite so far?
It's hard to beat the Alehouse.
That's fair. Yeah, the Alehouse Drake. Love that.
Talk about one that was like a farm, like a.
Oh yeah, the barnyard like, Dragonette.
The
yeah.
barnyard one. Yeah. Yeah,
I think mine's still the Keyhole. I like the Keyhole Dragonette a lot.
Keyhole's very good. Yeah. Lantern, I feel like I wish its lantern belly ability did more. Like, I feel like this dragon's whole steez is, you know, it's called a lantern dragonette. I would hope that its light was a little more consistent.
Yeah, the fact that it can only happen for like three fucking minutes in a day is
once per day. It can give you at best an hour of light.
Yeah,
it's like it's cool magic light, and I get that, but at the same time. I wish it was a little more consistent. Maybe its belly's always glowing a little bit, and then it can, like, really dial it up to, like, become magical light at Lantern Belly. That's probably how I would, like, interpret that. But, yeah, they're chill. I like the design a lot, the sort of, like, waxy translucentness of it all. The fact that, like, you know, it seems like light can basically pass through all of it.
It's cute.
A good little guy.
Are just you
loves,
happy?
Loves eating candles.
It does. It loves some candles. Yeah. I took a Lantern Dragonette to a Yankee Candle shop. Holy fuck, dude.
Oh. Do you think they look at the other, like, scents of candles and view that as, like, different flavors?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, nice. We have a nice vintage is the word I'm trying to say.
I'm Vincent Vintage.
Yeah.
Ooh, Zach, new address dropped.
There we go. Write it down. But we have this nice vintage twilight forest. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yes, it has notes of pine and molasses.
I'm noting some blackberry in there.
There's a hint of blackberry in there. Yeah.
Ooh, so exotic.
I like them. I think they're cool.
I do too. Alrighty. Last dude.
Last dude. Horrifying.
Our last dude who's fucking rad is the Eater of Dust.
It says over the stat block that it does have another name.
Does it?
Yeah. If you look at down where it's over the stat block.
The Yakatshi.
Yakatshi.
Now, Zach, I know what you're thinking. Eater of Dust. Isn't that just a vacuum cleaner? But no.
No,
this is
not.
This is like a big, like, bone armor man with a fucking, like, hand, like jaw hand.
He does have a jaw hand, yeah.
Like, it's one arm, it's doing the, there's some, like, anime-ass video game that I'm thinking of that I can't quite place where that happens. It's like, God, I'll find it. Fire Emblem Fates. There's a character who's, like, part dragon, and her hand will just, like, turn into, like, a dragon mouth and shoot you with a projectile. It's Corrin. But, yeah, it's got a big jaw hand.
Well, it's like, because his hand is, like, curled underneath the jaw.
And it's
coming out the top of his forearm is just, like, a big mouth.
Yeah. Fascinating.
It's a fascinating creature.
This terrible creature resembles an imposing knight wearing Baroque plate armor made of calcified resin. Huh. Its helm is a blank gray oval without eye slots or mouthpiece, and it carries a glistening greatsword with one or more slavering fanged mouths.
Awful. Whoa.
Eaters of Dust can consume just about anything with their horrible animate maw blades. That's fucking sick.
That's really cool.
Maw blade?
I don't know how I
feel
about
Tome of Beasts?
I don't know how I feel about the word slavering, but maw blades is pretty cool.
Yeah. They eat just about anything, including most gems and metals, but they prefer the flesh and souls of mortals to any other form of payment.
Awful.
Yeah. They exist in mercenary companies. Eaters of Dust, or Yakatshi, as they are sometimes called in ancient planar texts, roam the lower planes, selling their services to archdevils, demon lords, and other fiendish rulers for a chance to sample new flavors and devour interesting morsels. Eaters of Dust often operate in small but deadly military units led by a powerful leader styled the Yakatnorog. They have an armor shell. While many sages confuse Eaters of Dust for some obscure variety of fiends, they are aberrations, escaped from a far-flung dimension of madness and nightmares. Indeed, their armor is not armor at all, but a secreted resin that hardens into a shell as strong as steel. When cracked, it exudes a... What is this word?
Nacreous?
Nacreous. To Google. Can Shaboy get a pronunciation? Yeah. Nacreous. Adjective. Having a pearly appearance.
Oh, okay.
When cracked, it exudes nacreous blood, and the resulting scar resembles mother of pearl. Interesting.
Hmm.
Heavily scarred Eaters of Dust seem to have a huge number of such mother of pearl inlays, but these are all marks of wounds they have survived. These guys are scary.
They're horrifying.
They take particular delight in destroying and devouring powerful magic weapons and armor, especially intelligent or holy weapons, and they charge recklessly into battle against opponents wielding such delicious viands. Another word I don't know.
Viands. We're getting our hook have just from this one.
Archaic, an item of food.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. They have nothing but contempt for most other life forms. Fair. Attacking and eating their allies at the first sight of weakness.
Holy shit!
A typical eater of dust is 7 feet tall and weighs more than 350 pounds. While an eater of dust cannot speak, it can telepathically communicate with almost any creature. Holy shit!
It's got a lot going on up here.
Yeah, let's burn through this real quick. Medium aberration, neutral evil, 17 armor class, 114 hit points, and a speed of 30. They are maxed out on strength and constitution at 20. They have a +17 charisma, a 15 wisdom, a 14 dexterity, and then average intelligence at a 10. They have bonuses to strength, constitution, and charisma saving throws. They have advantage, or not advantage, they have proficiency in athletics, intimidation, and perception. They are resistant to acid and cold damage. They're fully immune to non-magic weapon attacks.
What?
They're also immune to... Under condition immunities, it says lightning. So maybe that's a damage immunity.
Huh.
But I'm going to say that they are immune to lightning damage and then also immune to blind and poisoned. They have blind sight out to 60 feet. They understand abyssal, common, infernal, and void speech, but cannot speak. They do have telepathy out to 100 feet. They have innate spellcasting. 3 times per day, they can cast True Strike, Inflict Wounds, and Freedom of Movement. And then once per day, they can cast Cure Wounds at 3rd level, Magic Weapon at 6th level, and Misty Step. They regenerate 5 hit points at the start of their turn. If they take fire damage, the trait does not function. They have something called Unending Hunger. An eater of dust can devour any substance with its maw blade, regardless of composition, and it never gets full. It can even gain nourishment from eating dust or soil. If eaters of dust have their maw blades stolen, lost, or destroyed, it slowly starves to death. Weird.
Holy
shit. It does
shit.
Conveniently have a weapon bond, though. A maw blade is part of the eater of dust. It can strike any creature as if it were magically enchanted and made of silver, iron, or other material required to overcome immunities or resistances. An eater of dust always knows the location of its maw blade as if using the locate object spell.
Damn.
And that maw blade, it can attack twice with it, or it can make a maw blade attack and cast inflict wounds, which is fun. It's a +9 to hit. It deals 4d6 +5 piercing damage, and the target must succeed a DC 17 constitution saving throw or gain 1 level of exhaustion.
Damn. All right, this thing's horrifying.
That's a mean Roomba.
That is a very mean Roomba.
That's a scary Roomba.
I agree. Holy fuck.
Zach, I think this is a good opportunity for a little bit of, but what if it wasn't?
But what if it wasn't?
What if it was an eater of rust?
No, eater of lust.
Oh. Zach.
Eater of course, lust.
Was right there.
With that maw? Think of the things it could do, Griff.
Let me show you what that... I don't want to know what that maw blade do.
Yeah, instead of the horrible
Ooh,
teeth.
Girl, what that maw blade do?
It's got some very luscious, like, kissy lips on it.
That's so fucking cursed.
Thank you.
This is my smooch blade.
My smooch blade.
You throw a cherry in the smooch blade's mouth, and then it spits the cherry out, and then it pulls out the stem
and it's
tied
twisted
in a knot.
And you're like,
but it's like
oh.
a full fucking like bow. Like,
yeah,
it's really
it comes
good.
Out. Somehow there's several like daisy chained together.
Yeah.
And you're like,
I've been saving them.
And you're like, what?
Oh, God.
It's a necklace and, made for you.
It does have that high charisma, and like honestly, it's one of those things where obviously it's probably not very charming or something like that, but it's that sense of presence.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I would, if this 7 foot tall, faceless dude with a smooch blade like rolled up on me, it's like, yeah, my place or yours, dude. Like, I'm already there.
Let's see what that smooch blade can do.
Eater of lust.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
How about instead of eater, greeter, greeter of lust? They're just like
greeter of yeah. dust.
They're like, hey, you're lusty. Come on, let's go. And I'm like, thank you for greeting me.
Yeah, at like the front of the pleasure house, the brothel, the den of sin.
Yeah, and they're like, I'm not interested in any of the girls. Give me the guy with the smoosh blade. I'm in.
Yeah. Oh, he's just the greeter. It's like, what? Yeah, he's just here to greet everybody. You know, like how Walmart has greeters?
Yeah.
He's our greeter.
Well, tonight he's my beater of lust. Let's go.
Oh. Beater of dust would also be very good if to, like, you know, when you're like beating out a rug.
Yeah.
That's like
he's actually he's actually got a vacuum for an arm.
Yeah. Yeah. Now see that I think that'd be very funny if it just had a vacuum hand. Very convenient.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's just vacuuming up a mess and just looks to camera and goes, "This goes into my tummy."
Nom 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 nom. Griffin, did we do it?
I think we did. I think we did Eater of Dust. I think we did Lantern Dragonette. I think we did Arena, and I think we did Barak.
Hey, you know what I gotta say about these four things?
What's that?
They're pretty fucking rad.
I'd say so.
We picked a rad bunch for
this. This is a good one.
For this episode of.
Holy shit! Oh my god! These folks are fucking rad!
It was a good Hassam Gadfaffer.
Solid.
Folks, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Zach and Griffin's Multiversal Pet Shop. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, you know, the usual stuff. You liked us. There's all the places that you can tell us that you liked us. You can do it, you know, with reviews and rates and subscriptions and follows or whatever else.
Yeah.
Just give it to us.
With the horrible hellscape that social media is in recently, the best place to connect with us is going to be on our private Discord server. And I know what you're thinking. Really, guys? A private Discord server? You're like E-list podcasters. And I'm like, that's fair. But it's only $2 a month to at our Patreon to get access to that. And you can chime in with all of the other shows on the Ghostlight Media Network. So if you're fans of us, you're going to be fans of the other shows. And you can chat about all of the shows with all of the people.
And like
all there.
And like we often say, you know, $2 a month, you're not going to notice it's gone.
You're going to find $2 like in that, like in your pocket of like your jeans, and you're going to be like, oh, cool. And like, you're not even going to think anything of it. It's $2. So give it to us instead.
Give us those $2, please.
Please.
We need it.
but for real, though, like, we don't grow and as a network without your support and without, frankly, your donations.
So we appreciate them.
Yeah, Pet Shop was the first show to spawn out of the network aside from Another Path. And that was entirely thanks to Patreon. You know, we don't make a buck doing this, but it helps pay for like website hosting fees. And when inevitably equipment breaks, we can replace it without having to break the bank.
Yeah.
So it genuinely really does go a long way. And we thank you for your support.
Yeah.
Enough of that out of the way. Let's get back to the boner jokes.
Boners. They're everywhere.
Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Griffin.
I've been Zach.
And just remember, folks, at the end of the day,
it's all about lust, baby.
Ooh, eater of lust. Give it to me. Thank you all for listening to episode 133 of Zach and Griffin's Multiversal Pet Shop. If you enjoyed the show, consider leaving us a review or telling a friend about us. You can find us as part of the Ghostlight Media Network over at ghostlightmedia.net or on Blue Sky at Pet Shop Cast. On our website, you can find links to our merch store and Patreon page, which helps support all of the Ghostlight Media shows and all of the amazing people who create them. Speaking of which, thank you to our patrons, Two Nerds in a Pod, Carl and Joel, for your continued support. We'd like to thank Nicole Tuttle-Robb for making our theme song. You can find Nicole on Twitter or Blue Sky at Nicole Soul Voice and on The Silent Secrets as part of Ghostlight Media. We'd also like to thank our friend Rin for voicing the ads here on the show. You can find Rin on Blue Sky at Rin Moran and on the Imprinted Echoes podcast, also part of Ghostlight Media. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, I cannot wait for the next challenger for my wrestling title. It'll be stiff competition. It's a callback and a boner joke at the same time. Woo! Good night!
This has been a Ghostlight Media production.